I would now like to introduce you, by the way, my name's David Niven. I'd now like to introduce you to Mike Jempson, who's the director of MediaWise. Now, Mike is a senior lecturer in journalism at the University of the West of England, and he's a visiting professor in media ethics at the University of Lincoln, as well as being a director of MediaWise, as well as somebody that I've probably known for about 20 years, who's passionate about the ethical side of journalism and has campaigned, conferenced, spoken, written, debated and confronted for all that time, as far as I'm aware, sometimes making him a very uncomfortable person to be with for those he's done so, but somebody who I admire a lot. And he's now going to just tell you for 10 minutes or so about MediaWise, because he's also running one of this afternoon's sessions. Mike Jempson.
It's nice to know you make people feel uncomfortable, isn't it? Mind you, I think that's one of the things that, that is often said. I wasn't too sure what to say today, and because given half a chance, I'll talk all day about this topic. And I decided that I wouldn't bring any memory sticks with presentations on, because I'm getting a bit sick of my own presentations anyway. And I thought that it might give you a break if I didn't use them. But as ever, when you're desperately trying to think of something to say, the best way is always to pick up the Daily Mail. This is yesterday's front page. Children grow up addicted to online porn sites. And then we turn inside and we have, will you inherit your mother's body? Which presumably is directed at younger people, with lots of pictures of mature and not so mature naked women, followed by mummy porn, an article about about what it says it is. And then you turn over and there's another article about children being affected by pornography. And one of the problems I think I've had to confront, I still regard myself as a journalist, is the sort of, it's not even a conscious hypocrisy about the way the media handle these sorts of issues. And my favourite example once upon a time was a page 3 series in The Sun, which was called Baby, Look at Her Now. And it contained a picture of a naked woman, an inset with a picture of her aged 5. And it contained references to, you know, wouldn't you like to go out and play with her? This is in the same newspaper that was running stories about how appalling paedophilia is and how we should string them up, etc., etc. And this notion that somehow page 3 legitimizes nakedness, pornography, at the risk of sounding like Mrs. Grundy, I remember when I first met David, and I'll explain how we met, we actually talked about this problem of a child who's being abused sitting opposite dad at the breakfast table, or sitting on a tube or on a bus and watching men ogling these naked pictures and somehow feeling that that is what is normal. And it raises all sorts of problems, I think, for journalists too, when they're confronted with the sorts of dilemmas, some of which we heard about this morning. And I remember at a meeting of the International Press Institute, the managing editor of The Sun getting, I think, thankfully, derisory laughs from the rest of the editors across Europe when I asked him if taking page 3 out of The Sun would be an editorial or a marketing decision, and he said it would be editorial. So there is some strange problem, which is also exemplified by the difficulty we've had in getting a clause about reporting children into the NUJ Code of Conduct. I'm the vice chair of the NUJ's Ethics Council, and when we revised the code in 2007, the biggest problem we had was getting back in a reference to checking before publishing or taking pictures of children. And because there is a sort of strong move, particularly by the police, to intercept photographers going about their normal duties. The idea of handing them yet another stricture led to a big reaction amongst the photographers, saying, why should we treat children in a public place as different to any other person? And trying to explain this has been really, really difficult, and it's something I've spent a long time trying to do. My last big journalistic job was here in the Southwest, making a TV programme for HTV, trying to expose what we believe to be a network of organised sexual abuse of children through the school and social services system, which we believe to be going on for about 20 years. It was a staggering piece of research, took about 2 years, was quite frightening, and what was particularly frightening was the local authorities didn't want us to do it, the police didn't want us to do it because they thought we were interfering with their investigations, the TV company was scared about libel, there were lots and lots of legal problems about what we could and couldn't say, and we had to ditch most of the material that we found. And yet we were trying to warn parents about these networks, and indeed we wanted to nail a couple of people that we were convinced were actively involved. We weren't allowed to do that. We were only allowed to mention people who had killed themselves when their complicity in these networks had been exposed. So it raised lots of interesting problems for me as a journalist about, you know, if we're trying to protect children, if we're trying to alert the public to hideous crimes, and yet we can't be explicit, how do we do it? And in those days, you were beginning to get some coverage of the sexual abuse of children, and, you know, as a result of Esther Ranson's efforts and Childline, etc. But it was all masked in a sort of rather strange, rather prurient approach. And so we set about, David and I spent a lot of time thinking and talking about this, and we ran a conference for journalists and social workers and police and various other lawmakers to try and tease out these issues. And I think that the report that came out of that, which I have here, is a fascinating document because it contains comments from lawyers, from police, from survivors of abuse, from journalists, and throws up all sorts of issues that we still need to deal with. And one of the big things, which is what we'll do this afternoon, is to think about how do we make sure that social workers understand the way the media works, and that media understands something about the way social work and child protection goes, because, as Elizabeth was saying earlier, you're not trained about this when you're training to be a journalist. The issue of children and media rarely comes up. I found it difficult to introduce it as a topic on courses that I've been running. The only way I've been able to do it, strangely enough, has been in other countries where UNICEF and the International Federation of Journalists took up these themes. And we've wandered about the world trying to get people to realise that, first of all, when children do appear in the media, which is not very often, they're mostly seen as victims. They're rarely given a voice. And if we are going to give them a voice, that needs to be done in a very protective way. And if you're going to work with children in the media, it takes time and thought and care. And that's the one thing that is very difficult for journalists to have and to do. I want to, if I can, just mention a couple of examples of where journalists, for the best of intentions, have actually got created problems for young people. And if I may, a quick sip. I'm going to take as an example a BBC programme made by BBC Scotland, where the journalists were convinced that they had a really good example of the way in which the child abuse paranoia that had been gradually developing, you know, that everybody's being abused, that it's a much bigger problem than it really is, these sorts of ideas that were actually being pushed by the media as much as anybody else. So they decided to make a programme about a man who had been convicted of abuse in a children's home. claiming that this was some sort of miscarriage of justice. And so they reconstructed the story that had been made, or the allegations that had been made about this man, using young people. Indeed, using young people in a drama club run by the man's wife and daughter. Somehow, nobody at the BBC thought this might be slightly unethical, never mind problematic. And the theme of the programme was that these disturbed boys who were making the allegations had realised you could make money out of it, and that they were really trying to squeeze some sort of compensation out of the system. The programme went out, and one of those boys decided to complain about it because he was named in the piece. He was a very successful businessman. He approached the BBC, and the BBC became incredibly defensive. They spent 2 years trying to bury his complaint. And we then became involved, and the thing had to come out in the open, and the BBC eventually recognised, first of all, that the guy who had been convicted wasn't appealing against his conviction, he was appealing against his sentence. So their idea of miscarriage of justice was slightly off-key. Secondly, that just because of pressure of time, the fact that his wife ran a drama club for vulnerable children just made life easier for the BBC, and they realised that was a pretty stupid error to have made. And eventually they conceded that they had to tighten up their rules and regulations, and David has since written a book about his experience. But it shows that, you know, it's one of many examples I could give of the media thinking that they're acting in the best interests of children. This is what they were claiming, but getting things seriously wrong. And the other classic example, of course, is the Facebook story of Dunblane, where, thank goodness, the use of the internet actually intervened and stopped this appalling invasion of young people's privacy. Do you all know about this story? Some enterprising journalist became a friend on Facebook of the children who survived the shootings at Dunblane. And when the youngest one turned 18, ran a story about how appalling it was that these young people were having sex, drinking, using drugs, and talking about it on their Facebook page. And I think the headline in the Scottish Daily Express, I'm not sure, Sunday Express, I'm not targeting Scotland, these just happen to be unfortunate examples, David, said, "Shame of Dunblane survivors." I think the PCC got 11,000 complaints.
Yeah, you're slightly jumping a bit at my comments, so I'll go into the details.
Sorry. Well, we've always had a very competitive relationship with the PCC.
No, it's very cooperative, if you can tell.
And the story was taken down. Why any journalist would have thought that that was a sensible thing to do, I don't know. But it shows to me how much further we've got to go in trying to get journalists to understand some of these issues. What we've tried to do through MediaWise, which mostly deals with complaints about the media and looks at the problem areas like reporting on suicide, reporting on minorities, and reporting on children. And contrary to my academic colleagues' preferences, we decided when we were asked by UNICEF to write about this to produce just a tiny little book that would go in a journalist's pocket. And in this, what we've tried to do is take some of the complicated issues of children's rights and suggest ideas for stories on one page, and then ask questions about the way journalists handle the stories, the way they go about collecting the information, the way they interview children, the way they actually publish the results, whether they interfere with or respect children's rights. This has been an enormously influential booklet, perhaps less in Britain than elsewhere. It's now in its third edition, and we'll be using this and the report of the then chair of the Family Law Bar Association, who made some recommendations in this report 15 years ago this afternoon, to try and come up with a way of introducing child protection into journalism courses and an understanding of the media into social work and child protection courses.